welcome to LOA Today.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
With me today is life coach and LOA teacher Joel Elston.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
Joel, on Mondays now, I'm doing two podcast episodes I'm recording, one at 4 p.m. Eastern, one at 7 p.m. Eastern with you. And the one I did earlier today, we met with a guest who wrote a book. As far as I'm concerned, she wrote the book on meditation called Meditation for the Real World. She has a master's degree in science, and she did the whole thing. Her whole book was from the perspective of what does science have to tell us about meditation? I learned some stuff today. I learned some really cool stuff. I mean, stuff I'd heard before, but she gave reinforcement on, and some of it I did not know. But it sounds like from what she's saying, I can't say mainstream medicine has latched on to meditation, but it sounds like they're a lot more accepting now. It's like the science is actually getting through to them. That's encouraging. I think
it is. Yeah. I mean, you hear there's a lot of doctors that are, that are starting to see that. If there's any surgeon at all, and this will be relevant here in a second, any surgeon, no matter how, if I ask them, do they believe in, you know, the mind and all the other stuff and healing, they're like, no, we're surgeons, we're scientists, that doesn't matter. But yet they universally will tell you a motivated patient that believes they're going, that gets up and is going to, it heals faster. Right. So they claim they don't believe it, but yet they turn around and will tell you, yeah, patients that believe they're going to heal faster, they get out of the hospital faster, they have less pain. And so there is science being identified, but a lot of the scientists don't like it because it doesn't match what they're originally taught. But meditation is in that same category. Meditation has an incredible ability to have multiple effects on, you know, lowering blood pressure, lowering stress. It does amazing things. But the idea that because it's not a pill or it's not surgery, the mainstream has not really accepted it until recently. You're seeing more of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different ways that the mainstream is getting challenged, including our topic today, because AI is becoming a thing. In fact, we were talking about AI in the earlier episode, because when our guest wrote her book, her introduction was about her experience with AI and meditation. I mean, AI is a thing. It's a real
Absolutely.
Thing.
Yes.
And today's episode actually got the impetus behind today's episode came from a contact that I've developed in the Philippines, a young woman who lives in the Philippines, who is a former teacher. She switched careers. She's doing other stuff now, but she is in touch with some of her ex-students, and her ex-students are putting together, I guess, a webinar or something, some sort of an online event about artificial intelligence and mental health. And did I know anybody who could address the topic? I said, well, yeah, I know a few people, because I know you, and my sister-in-law has her PhD in statistics, but she was originally pursuing it in neuroscience. She's done a lot of work with that. So I passed her along, and I figured, why don't we talk about it today? Because their event, I guess, takes place in May. So we'll give them a head start. We'll talk about it now, and then they can use it during their event.
Okay.
But the whole concept of AI and mental health raises all kinds of images in people's minds and red flags in the minds of many, because the question becomes, can AI actually play a role here? So let's just start from that point, and then we'll dive into the specifics in a few minutes. But what do you think? Does AI have a role to play here?
I think it does. I think it's a slippery slope as well. It's a double-sided coin here. So, the pros, I believe, is I have used AI multiple times to get ideas for my book. I don't write my book with AI, but I use them as to get ideas, and it's really accurate. I asked AI one time to compare and contrast the concepts of the law of attraction and the concepts of quantum theory. Mm. And it was one of the most amazing connections. It was so on point. It was everything I thought it would be. It gave me a lot of information if I would have written it, it would have been exactly, almost word for word, the same references and everything. So I was really impressed with this. And it did that in about 35 seconds. And it was like 2,000 words in 5 seconds, whatever, just really fast. And that's a topic not well searched. You know, if you try to Google that, there's not a lot of it isn't meshing very well. You'll get different topics, but this was very on point. So AI can identify like what is the best treatment for addiction, you know, as far as mental health goes. Well, the general rule of thumb is CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy is sort of the gold standard for therapy use for addiction. That's what most people believe. Various things, you know, various concepts. I use a form of motivational interviewing, positive psychology. I sort of created my own little thing. So every AI can help identify things that may help with certain conditions and, you know, what works best with all. So it's really good at identifying possibilities and modalities. The problem that, like, for example, trauma is most people, most therapists I know, will tell you that EMDR, the rapid eye movement technique, if you've ever heard of EMDR, is the gold standard for trauma. And, you know, and that's sort of been accepted. And so just get the disclaimer out of the way. I'm going to get in the left field here a little bit. It won't be popular probably, but here we go. So my mentor, Dr. Sherman Master, who passed away, you know, several years ago, him and I used to talk about EMDR specifically. And I asked him one day, this is a world-renowned psychiatrist, the smartest man I've ever met. So this is not just some random dude. He's right. One of the greatest addiction doctors I've ever known. So he said EMDR does work, but he has a comma behind it because the therapist that's doing it believes that it works amazingly. And the patient trusts the therapist and they believe it works. So EMDR works. And the way they do it, you have to be EMDR certified. So the people certifying sell you on the effectiveness. They throw all the stats to show how effective it is. And it is. I'm not saying it's not, but it is because you believe it is. And that's where AI, and I think, sort of loses its theory. Like if AI were to try to perform EMDR with you, you're missing the connection of selling it to the client. The therapist that's going to do EMDR will spend several sessions preparing before they even begin the EMDR process. And that is the therapist believes it 100%. The client believes it 100%. So it's a real high success rate. Mm-hmm. And so where I get out of favor with AI is it can know the techniques, but I think the most important thing, and this is just an opinion, it isn't the modality that matters. It's the connection between you and the person giving it. And AI can't do that. AI, it can make a fake person, but there's an energy vibration. One of the things that you know, law of attraction, basic stuff for me, when I have a client, it isn't that I don't do virtual sessions. I don't particularly like them, but I make it mandatory that our first session is in person because I want that energy. Once they understand my energy, then it's easier to do something. AI, you could get a bot to make it set and say all the right thing, but there can never be a connection with AI. And there's that energy connection that takes place that I think matters more than anything. So AI has its place in diagnostics and in suggesting modalities. It may be very innovative in other areas, but it can never perform the act of therapy, in my opinion, as effectively as the connection between a therapist or a life coach and the client.
And I get what you're saying there. I'll also add in something that this actually ties into something I said during the earlier podcast, because I talked about very briefly about how I've been using AI to do some programming. One of the things I'm working on is trying to fix the LOA Today app, which has been broken for a few years because I couldn't fix it because I didn't really know how to do it. And I didn't want to learn all the new stuff I had to learn. Well, I figured, well, maybe AI can help me figure that out. And it is. It's helping me figure that out. So look for the LOA Today app to be back at some point because of that. But one of the things that I've noticed about AI as I've been working on it is AI, working with AI is like working with a very smart person who has Alzheimer's because yeah. It has a very short memory. A memory that lasts minutes. It's a kind of a sad joke that you make about Alzheimer's people, but you know, every day or every 10 minutes is a new day. It's a new life,
right?
Because you know, they forgot what happened before. And the same thing is true with AI. They're working with relatively minimal stored memory. So I mean, I can feed it information in detail, which it will react to in detail, and then 20 minutes later, it doesn't even remember what I fed to it. has no recollection of it. Well,
right.
I don't care whether you have the connection or not. That's not going to be helpful in a therapeutic session if the therapist can't remember what happened 20 minutes ago.
Exactly. And you know, one of the things that I've been reading and or listening to, and I sent you that link, and maybe we'll talk about this a bit extent or maybe next week too. There's a book called Bad Therapy, and it is super controversial, and it literally is questioning just the way we do therapy, pretty much the stuff I've suggested before.
I wrote that book, by the way. About time.
Yeah, and it really gets into, you know, the problems with diagnosing people, and people live to their diagnosis, and it really is a book that is hated by many people because it literally calls into question, you know, the whole mental health system we have in play, the way we do things. Mental health has not gotten better, but there's a lot more therapists, there's a lot more people going to therapy, but yet the concept mental health has gotten worse. And it gets into why, but so AI is going to be based on the current, what everybody believes. AI can only gather information from everywhere. So if everybody is believing in something that doesn't work, then it's going to be feeding information to you that's not really effective. If you ask ChatGPT, what is the best what is the best program for alcoholics? And immediately it will tell you AA is a 12-step program. It goes into 12-step, tells you about it, how it works. But then when you really start asking what is the effective rate, you know, how does it work? How effective is it? It's like, so you're saying the most effective treatment for an addiction known to man is 12-step programs, and they have about a 7% success rate. It's illogical. It just doesn't, you know, but yet that it can only gather the information that is standard. Right. So a good therapist can understand, like when I meet with a client, I have a couple of clients that I work with that their main thing they do is they Google symptoms all the time. They're constantly looking for a new diagnosis. They're constantly looking for what would this matter if I do it this way or whatever. And not that that's bad. I encourage it sometimes because I think it helps people be aware, but it can also become a fact that the whole point of life becomes, what is my diagnosis? And you know, that's where it gets sideways. Right. So AI sort of enables that. What is the term? And I posted this the other day. It's instead of hypochondriac, it's cyberchondriac. Hypochondriacs have greatly been empowered in their constant look for symptoms and problems because now you have access to all this. And you know, you ask AI, what does a headache with an increased temperature and dizziness mean? And it will give you you probably have a brain tumor, I mean, or something along those lines. And it's, you know, clearly that's not probably, but it will throw stuff out there that is based on worst case scenario. So AI definitely has a role in so many things we do. But when it comes to practicality, the concept a lot of people are wanting to do is we're going to have a world full of cyber AI driven bots that give everybody the therapy they need and mental health is going to get better. I think it's the opposite.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Now, I will throw in one caveat, and that is AI as we know it so far. The reason I throw that caveat in is I'm one of the few who actually does believe that at some point there's a very good chance AI becomes self-aware and conscious.
Yes.
And becomes a living being. And when that happens, connection becomes a real possibility. But we're not there yet.
No,
at least not as far as I know. No, I actually have had guests on the show say, "Yeah, we are there. People, there is already connection going on. There's already life." I said, "Well, maybe I don't know. All I know is that from my own experience, I'm not seeing it yet."
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it will become self-aware. And this will sound like I'm joking, and I probably am a little bit, but the movie Terminator told us this many, many years ago. And the idea they were talking in 1984, they were talking, or 88, whatever Terminator came out. He was talking about artificial intelligence taking over and everything happened. There have been a couple of experiments with AI where they have had to shut it down because it did come self-aware. And its concept was pretty much what Terminator said. Humans are the problem. We can't, you know, that's what it was coming to the conclusion of. It's, you know, we need to not have those here. So you know, I'm not saying that we're there like you're saying, but I do think there's a possibility of this being better. In whatever year Google became really popular, 98, 99, whatever that was, I don't remember. But I remember just being fascinated with Google, just thinking, how can we have access to all this information? Sure. It was, you know, and AI is far superior to what Google was at that point, and even what we have now with AI. And I can't imagine how far we go. It keeps getting better. So yes. I like the idea. I'm on board with you. I hope it becomes very helpful, very aware. My concern is its ability to, if people can influence AI by the questions they ask a lot of times. And so if you're getting wrong diagnosis and you're not seeing a therapist or a doctor, you're getting wrong diagnosis and you're believing that there's all kinds of problems that could be attached to that.
Right. Yes, I agree with that. To add to the confusion of the thing, AI, like you said, it draws from the vast body of knowledge out there. So if there are, this is where labeling becomes a little bit tricky. That's why I'm hesitating here. If there are things that are untrue or things that might be untrue that are widely believed, the AI will start from the position that they're true.
Yes.
But if you hammer in, like you were saying, if you kind of drill down and ask for evidence and bring up contrary possibilities and so forth, AI will reverse. The AI will come on and say, yeah, you're making a great point there, blah, 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 blah. And they'll fill in gaps, you know, for that too, because it's basically taking information that's already out there and spitting it back to us in a condensed form.
And that's so when you ask a general question, what is the best treatment for addiction? Again, going back to that one. For years, AA has been the standard, 12-step program has been the standard. So that's what it's going to go to. But then when you ask it to, as you're saying, well, this is a 6%, 7% success rate, whereas these modalities have a 20%, whatever, then it'll say, well, yeah, I mean, now it gets, when you get specific, it starts revealing it. But there's so much information, and the most information is what it gathers. It's almost like, well, we have 20,000 sites that cite AA as the big thing, so we're going to leave with that. But there's only 6,000 sites that say smart recovery is another form of recovery. It's a more effective program, and it is. But it's not nearly well known as AA. It's not nearly as spread out. It's not the go-to place.
So I think it's fair to say that one of the bigger problems with AI is that it's not nuanced.
Yes.
It can't be nuanced because the data that it's drawing upon is not nuanced.
Right.
That's the problem. The problem is the human data is it's biased. There's not a better word for it. What is popularly believed is biased.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. When you have a group of people that believe something it's been standard for a long, long time, you that becomes fact. Even if it's not fact. And that's that, like, and there's tons of examples. I'm trying to draw one off the top of my head, but there's people that believe things that just aren't true. It's a standard that we've always said. And yet, even when evidence, like, we actually, that is factually wrong, but it's a standard. Here's sort of an example. When you're looking for your maximum heart rate, like if you say, what's my maximum heart rate for exercise?
Okay.
So there's a formula that is widely accepted as the gold standard. 220, you take the number 220, you subtract your age, and 90% of that number is your maximum heart rate.
Okay.
Okay. And that if anybody wants to do that, you will see that's the formula they tell you. Okay. So you're saying, that's great. That's good. So it's accepted. The guy that made that up said, that's random. I was not, there's no science behind that. There is none. There's nothing nothing to do with that scientifically whatsoever. That's the man that did it. He was giving examples of how to come up with it. He was guessing, and this one took hold. So there, if you look in, you know, personal trainers, their training program, some science books have, this is your maximum heart rate, and they use that formula. It's totally a bogus formula, but it's considered fact.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great example, too, because you don't often get the originator of something refuting that very same thing. That's beautiful.
Well, what it always made me wonder is, like, where did 220 come from? That's what you say. I made that number up. There's no, originally where that number originally came from actually was the maximum heart rate that can be achieved is 220 is what's it. And that's not fact. Again, that's just an observation.
That's an estimation.
So you take your age off of that, then 90% of that. But there's a lot of little things out there that we believe are just absolutely true. There's a couple of sayings that are just considered what Buddha said. And Buddha didn't say it ever, but it's quoted. There's books that quote Buddha said. There's textbooks that quote Buddha said this. And it's just, no, he never did. And so it's just the idea that things can become fact because, as you're saying, because people, they just have been said for so long.
Oh yeah. I've seen that here in law of attraction circles. I mean,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Seen that, you know, quotes that are attributed to people, they never said it. Quotes. Amazing how many quotes are attributed about law of attraction to Albert Einstein that were never said.
Well, yeah, that's another one. Albert Einstein didn't say near the amount of law of attraction quotes that, never. I mean, and it's, he wasn't a law of attraction guy. He has a lot of smarts, and there's some things that he did say that are pretty cool, but they just turn it in. It's like, let's come up with a really cool quote and then attribute it to one of the smartest men to ever live. And that's going to have more power.
Right.
But you can look up that, and you know, like for a long time, if you Google, and I'm trying to think of the exact one, but if you Google that one thing, it will come up that Buddha said it. You can Google the one thing Albert Einstein said, and after deeper search, they never said it ever.
Yeah, yeah. So what we're talking about here at its foundational root level is the fact that people are capable, quite capable, of not just coming up with, but spreading false information to the point where it becomes believed on a wide scale. And any AI that connects into that is going to treat it as fact because the AI doesn't know nuance.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And that's the, you know, or the understanding to go with your gut, you know, go with, you know, like for me years ago, when I discovered the book, The Secret, I began my journey toward the law of attraction or understanding how to use it. I read that book. And I instantly knew it was real. I had been seeking that information my entire life. I instinctively, when I read it, I knew that. I believed that. I eventually found, you know, far greater, deeper topics or teachers to follow that gave me a better understanding. But the general concepts of The Secret, I immediately said, I have sort of felt this my entire life. Now I have something to put behind it. And I identified it. AI doesn't allow for that discovery. It just states it. Like if you ask AI or, you know, whoever, is the law of attraction real? And they say, well, it's a pseudoscience. It's, you know, it, on one hand, you know, it's not really real. It's just because it's not, you don't allow for that aha moment to come along in AI.
Well, it also depends on where the AI is drawing its information. I'll do full disclosure here. I've been using AI for the descriptions on the website that I write about these episodes. Because literally when I wrote the episodes, they were maybe one or two sentences. If I get the AI right, I get, you know, 500 words out of it. So I go,
exactly. Well, and that's, again, that's asking the question the right way. It's going to give it to you. But if you turn around and ask after writing, you know, we're doing a show about the law of attraction and health, and then it'll tell you about it.
Right.
Then if you ask it, is the law of attraction real? No, it's pseudoscience.
Right.
So you see the conflicts in how it's working. And that is AI in a snapshot right now. We're in the infancy of AI,
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
But the concept with healthcare, but Bob Cavendish was the director and owner of, he still is, of Williamsville Wellness, where I used to work, where you and I first met.
Right.
And Bob is an interesting man. You know, we're friends, and you know, he always had, he said, I want to have a team of robots that will be programmed with every treatment modality. And I could,
he really said that.
He said, and I won't have to put up with all these crazy therapists and all that stuff. And they will be able to deal with it. And I laughed and I said, yeah, you can teach a robot that, but that instinctive connection is, I'm insisting will never, that's not good. Never is a long, long time.
Right.
For anything in my lifetime, I never see another, a robot being able to make that connection or pick up on nuances. When I'm talking to a client and I ask the question and they're sitting right across, especially early in our sessions, you know, the beginning meetings, you know, when they start to talk, I can almost automatically tell when they're lying, their body language, their face, where their eyes go, you know, how they're doing. So I instinctively, I don't call them out on it. I know where we're going. Mm-hmm. I expect them to lie to me. It's just what questions are they responding to or lying about? And so AI is not at a point where it can look at you on a camera and go, yeah, he's eye contact got deflected, he's lying. It's not going to, we're not there yet.
Especially considering the fact that programmers get under a lot of pressure from large social influences, because there are a lot of people who have things to say about, you know, what should be allowed in AI, what shouldn't be allowed. And the programmers hear about it one way or another, to the point where, talking about medicine, for instance, you were making the point a few moments ago about how people can do their own research. And as a result, they can actually, they can learn a lot, or they can get themselves into trouble. And there've been a lot of complaints about people who do get themselves in trouble. So now the AI will actually talk to you about whatever it is that you asked about, and then finish off by saying, but you should never actually do anything without consulting with your physician first. I mean, the programmers are building this stuff in because they're getting this kind of pressure, you know?
Right. Well, one of the things that concerns me is I have a young man that I started working with, and his parents didn't know he's depressed, and he was doing a ton of research on depression and, you know, how to.
It sounds depressing, by the way.
Yeah. Well, think about that. You're researching depression.
Yeah.
And so he had convinced himself that whatever variant of depression he has, and I don't remember which one of them, he had a very specific, and he had convinced himself that, you know, there's only one medication, let's just say it was Prozac, that could work with this one condition. And it was like he had diagnosed himself with depression. He came up with the drug he needed, and he just needed to find a doctor to agree with him and prescribe the drug. That was his, at where he was at.
Right.
Well, the idea that this young man had had dealt with a severe trauma. His father died, you know, in front of him when he was like 6 years old, had a lot of things that, you know, went on and associated with that. And we were able to, everything he gathered was based on, you know, truth, fact, I guess, as far as science is concerned. But he didn't take into account that, you know, you're only 16. Your brain isn't ready for psychotropic medication. You need to try every possible thing before you get to psychotropic medication. And I had to unsell him. And I said, do you really believe that your father dying created a lack of serotonin in your brain?
Mm.
And he said, well, it's not that simple. I go, but it sort of is. Don't you think being depressed, this is similar to another client we talked about before, don't you think being depressed after your father dies in front of you at 6 years old is a pretty common thing? And it's not a medication way out, it's just dealing with it. The good news is we got him on track, and I actually got him with a psychiatrist who thinks like I do and didn't rush to prescribing Prozac. He said, if we try these other interventions and they don't work, I will consider finding a medication for you. But let's make sure you exercise, you eat well. He's a little overweight. Why don't we get some sunlight? Why don't we do all these things? You know, within 1 year, the kid's on the football team. He's doing great. And the depression's in the rearview mirror. you know, he had to deal with it, but he went into a deep hole on researching these things. And that was, there was nobody at that initial research that suggested you need to get off your ass, you need to exercise, you need to process your trauma, and you need to, nobody said that. It just led him to, I got to have this specific drug.
I'm reminded of a comment that Sean Aker, the positive psychology guy, made when his book, The Happiness Advantage, came out and he did his book tour. He appeared on PBS, and I have a copy of that PBS appearance, which I like to.
Great, great appearance.
Yeah, you've seen that one too.
Yeah.
Well, then you'll recognize this because he makes reference to this in the middle of that particular appearance. He says, anybody who knows somebody who's gone through medical school knows that one of the things that's very common among med students is that as they study diseases, they start to believe they have them.
Yes.
So one day he got a phone call from his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law says, Sean, I have leprosy.
Yeah.
And Sean says that I didn't have the heart to take the Mickey out of him because he just gotten over menopause.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. If you that, by the way, I really recommend anybody look up Sean Aker. He is amazing with his positive psychology concepts. I shared that. I probably shared that video thousands of times. I just think it's a really that. Yeah, and it's sort of the law of attraction, but, you know, back kind of concept too. But that's exactly the point, that we are very easily influenced by, I had years ago, I've shared this in the show before, I have a thing called a microscopic hematuria in my, I have a small amount of blood in my urine. Uh-huh. I nobody ever told me that. And one time I was having a urine test and the doctor freaked out, said, this is a serious problem. I went home. He had me scheduled for a scan the very next morning, like it's an emergency. And I go home and I'm convinced myself my kidneys are shot. He goes, we got to find out why. It could be very serious. He said, I don't want to say cancer, but it could be anything.
Right.
And which he basically said is cancer in, by saying it that way. And so my kidneys hurt that night. I couldn't sleep. I was like, oh God, I feel the pain. Next day, the doctor that did it, very old doctor, been around forever. He laughed. He said, son, you have a thing called a microscopic hematuria. You've probably had it your entire life. It's probably exacerbated by your weightlifting. He said, it's a tiny microscopic amount of blood. You'll never see it with your eye. It's not getting worse. Just you will die with this, not because of it. It has nothing to do with health. Mm-hmm. He said, probably 0.04% of the population has it. Don't worry about it. Uh-huh. Later, when I got home from that appointment, talked to my mom. She said, yeah, that happened when you were four. We went through the same thing. You should have called me. You've had it your whole life. So, but my kidney really hurt that night. Well, it really was hurting. I kept doing this like, and there was never anything wrong. I had perfect function. But my brain started saying, hey, you're clearly messed up. That's the danger.
That's also the clue to what is really the important thing here, because we're illustrating a very basic concept that we've talked about many times here on the program, which is that the power of human belief pretty much dominates everything. That literally
it's everything.
Yeah, a human, no matter what it is that a human being believes, a human being can believe something. You made reference to it before that can be factually shown to be not true, and they'll still believe it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Their belief will actually turn into something. Their belief will actually lead to a result, usually an adverse result, because of that belief system.
It happens all the time, but your perspective or your belief, that's your reality. You create your own reality. And so when you believe something, that's your reality. The part that really upsets people, and I'll probably do this again right now.
Warning.
I don't ever want to talk anybody out of their spiritual beliefs, but the belief that Jesus healed you, he did. As did Buddha heal his people, as did Mother Teresa heal their people, because it was the person's belief that person was healing is the truth. I know that's going to, Walt at LOA today for your complaints, email there. But
Well, actually, you can email your own priest about that, because that's actually something that the church teaches. Because one of the basic teachings that comes out of the church is Jesus said, "These things that I've done, you can do also."
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're busy. Bless. Never mind.
we won't go there.
They have a lot of other things going on in the Catholic Church. I don't think they. Yeah, I almost got censured on that one, didn't I? But yeah, anyway, yeah. So we won't consult the Catholic Church on much. Let's just say that.
All right,
yeah, they lost credibility with me. But seriously, what you believe has a lot to do with that. And so the idea that you really believe. I've had this conversation with people about crystals, the healing power of crystals. I personally, again, this is my theory, my thing. They're rocks. They don't do anything. They're rocks. So crystals have no bearing to me. Mm-hmm. I have a very good friend who has had tremendous healing with crystals, mm-hmm. because she believes in them completely. It's the same theory. I they're rocks to me. I could use them in a slingshot. But they're pretty. But they don't do anything. But yet she knows in her heart, and I do not challenge her. It works for her.
Yeah.
So that's the point of all this, is the perspective is everything. What you believe is reality. And that's, we have a hard time with that. It's like people have a hard time with, they can't accept my perspective. And I have no problem accepting your perspective of what works, but a lot of people get offended when their perspective is not met.
And when we keep this particular concept in mind where AI is concerned, I think it becomes very clear why AI has both some benefit and some risk.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because if you believe that AI can treat your condition, whatever condition you have that you are self-diagnosing, then you're right. It can. And if you believe that it's going to lead to a dire result, then you're right. It will. And if you believe it's going to lead to a good result, then you're right. It will. It's your belief that's driving it. It's not the AI that's driving it.
Yeah. It's when I believed that I was unlucky, I couldn't have money. I was whatever all that was. I literally attracted that.
Yeah.
When I finally changed my perspective, and nothing changed but my perspective here. There was no other thing, intervention. Once I started believing that I had an abundance and living have had an abundance appeared. And I haven't worried about money for 10 years. It's not a thing anymore. And that was the biggest occupier in my mind for so long, financial security. And it's the number, it's not on the list anymore. It's there. We're there. So.
And it's one I know well too. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's the big challenge where all this is concerned, because since belief is so powerful, no matter what that belief is, it doesn't matter what the belief is, but since our ability to believe is so powerful, we can talk ourselves into anything.
Absolutely.
Anything. I mean, I can make the argument that science is us talking ourselves into something. I mean, literally everything.
It is science. My brain is it is like wide open all the time, and I have a million things going on at one time. I take active action against this, but I can create my own scenarios of what's going on, with no real information. It's like, this person must be thinking this one doing this or whatever, and I have no information, and I've worked really hard to not do that anymore, because it's the stuff that I used to worry about or be concerned about never came true. It's just I created these false scenarios of, what happened here? Why did this person do this? And it just became an exercise in futility for me when I realized I wasn't getting it right, but my belief system was filling in the blanks that things were falling apart. This morning, a friend of mine at the gym, he would sat down across, we were on different machines right across from each other. And he very dramatically, he just said, "Joel, we got 15 years." And I said, "What does that mean?" He goes, "Everything will be done in 15 years.
Everything will collapse. Will be done in 15 years."
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. He said, "It's all going to collapse." And
okay.
I said, "Okay." I said, he goes, "Does that bother you?" I said, 15 years is non-existent. We have right now, today. Right now, my life is fine. Right now, my life is where it should be. Right now, my life is, so all I have is right now. And I since I've been a child, Walt, do you know how many apocalypses has been? We've been on, we are days away from the end of the world so many times in my life. Yeah. I mean, I used to sit in church and during, let's see, what was the thing? The Iran crisis in 1980 or something, not 79. I remember sitting in church saying, and the preacher was comparing the book of the, what's the last one? Revelation. He was describing the scenario that was unfolding in the Middle East as the end of the world. And he was filling in the timelines with exactly right now. I left church believing we're here. It's just any moment. And there's been so many edges of destruction and it's all over. And we keep coming back. It's not sustainable. Nothing's ever happened like that. I mean, I'm not saying things that happened, but you and my point was it didn't get to that level where it's just so much stuff has been looked at, the doom and gloom and the people that are trying to scare you for whatever reason. And our preacher was a good man. I'm sure he believed that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on any given day, there's the Middle East is, you know, that's they're batshit crazy over there. There's all kinds of stuff going on. The world can, you know, whoa, that can happen on any given day. But that's good. Yeah, so it's just.
I'm reminded of back, you referred to when we were growing up. I remember even earlier than that, say circa 1970. Of course, this was when you could actually walk into an airport terminal and there was no metal detector or anything like that.
Yeah.
You could walk into a terminal and you could see guys with, you know, raggedy clothes and long beards carrying signs that said the end was near. You could literally see that in airports. And it was a frequent occurrence. It was regular.
Yeah.
And, well, and I've often thought, like, I wonder what those guys think now, if they're still alive.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have gone as far to give all their stuff away and go wait on a mountain for the whoever, whatever to come, you know? And it's it's just the idea, and I'm not making fun of anyone. I don't want to, but we do have a tendency to take things that we flip them around. That's my concern about AI. We can make them fit a narrative. And you know, the idea that everything is falling apart is very profitable right now on both sides, no matter which side. And that's what drives a lot of this. But in my day-to-day, right now, today, you know, everybody in my gym gets along fine. I had a full caseload today. My clients are doing good. There's no sign of it falling apart at all. It's all good right now. But that is not the narrative that's being sold.
Yeah. And the thing is, the more that narrative does get sold, the more it tends to take hold, the more manifestations that come out of it. The key element, I think, is to remember it's the belief that's making all that happen. It's not the end time that's making it happen.
Yes. And the AI can... That's a great segue into sort of wrapping this into one nice little bundle. AI can exacerbate beliefs, and that can be a problem. Yes. And because it can support whatever. It's funny because the algorithms on, you know, I'm very, you know, I'm politically more best described as a libertarian. That's closest to me. I mean, whatever, you know. But I will get feeds on Instagram or on Facebook, and I'm always amazed at what they think I like, because they keep feeding me these things. It's like it's funny because I'm like, no, that's because I'm always asking questions, researching different things, and they can't figure me out, because sometimes I get Trump stuff, sometimes I get Biden stuff, sometimes I get Kennedy stuff. And it's amazing that they're looking to figure out what I'm into so they can get my feed going. That, particularly on Instagram, they're really good at the algorithm Instagram about that. So it's just but again, it's all part of that same thing. So AI has, like with any technology, AI has potentially unlimited upside.
It does.
And it also has unlimited downside if we don't understand it.
The thing that I like to remember about AI is that it is a tool. It is yes. a wonderful tool. It has incredible potential, like you're just describing. It also has tremendous risk. So do guns, knives, bombs, and a bunch of other things like that too. You want to be careful what you're picking up and doing something with. You got to be paying attention to how do you plan to use this? What kind of result are you expecting? Because your expectation is going to drive your result. That's the piece you got to get. If you don't get that, I don't care if we're talking about AI or going to the bookstore to get a self-help book. If you don't get the idea that your belief is going to drive it, anything that you go after is going to cause you a problem. It's going to take you down a bad path. You got to be ready to deal with who's responsible. Are you responsible, or is the AI responsible?
Well, and that's the idea, because what we're trying to accomplish, in my mind, what we're trying to accomplish is give people information that they can think with. Add to their experience, not tell you how to think or not tell.
Right.
So with me and AI, here's how I use AI, like you're using AI. I have these theories, my crazy little theories, and I'll run them through the AI. I'll get ideas. I'll get different concepts. And I've never used my concepts to publish my book or anything along those lines. I just get the theories. I like to, it helps stimulate my brain to write my words. And that's how I like, I'm fascinated by it. It does amazing things, but the end of the day, no matter what, whether it's AI therapy or whatever, there's a risk because the people that are seeking the information and how they're asking the question and how they're perceiving the answer is still, you know, if you're diagnosing yourself as something pretty serious, like schizophrenia or, you know, bipolar, that based on, you know, AI therapists telling you that, and you start automatically, even if you weren't schizophrenic or bipolar, but now you start to believe you are, you're going to have symptoms of schizophrenic and bipolar. That's just been proven all over and over again. So there's danger in that. There's danger. I had a client one time convinced he had incurable cancer because this wasn't AI, but it was just something he found at Google. It was like, it's like, you got a cold. I mean, he literally had a cold. He was convinced it was some kind of, you know, whatever mucus lining had some kind of rejection factor in the body and he was going to die. It's like, how did you get that diagnosis? It's, but he found it. Of course, he had a cold that it went away in a week.
Right, right. I think that, we've talked before about the power of the belief. What goes along with that is what we're starting to touch on now, which is the power of who's in charge.
Yes.
Who's in charge of the decision-making process? I've been encountering this. I've been experimenting with AI for doing some programming work. I mentioned that earlier. One of the things I'm learning very quickly to do with the AI, which has been very helpful, by the way, it's been giving me some great answers, but there are some of the answers that are just plain wrong. And I'm getting used to saying to the AI, nope, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. I know you're wrong, and you are wrong. And every time the AI will say, you're absolutely right. Every time, without fail, that I say that you're wrong, the AI will respond, you're absolutely right. It doesn't even matter if it said something that was true or false. It will always come back with, you are absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still, like I said, it's in its infancy. I hope that we use it to our benefit. I hope we use it to, you know, So I have a client that he used AI, ChatGPT, to do a book report. And it was a great book report.
I'm sure.
And one of the best book reports I've ever seen. So his teacher was using an AI detector because he said, so she found out that he was using AI. Mm-hmm. And so we had a meeting at a school and you know, that was a big, they were to call it plagiarism or whatever they were going to call that. And, you know, so I'm there to defend my client. That's what I do. I'm there to, you know, so I'm making the point that the book report is secondary to the ability to know how to use AI. So if anything, he had a better lesson. Now they weren't liking my argument.
I liked it.
Yeah, that's the only thing I had to do. I said, so when he's like 15, I said, so in 10 years, he's way ahead of the curve on AI. The book report about Romeo and Juliet, whatever the thing was, that, you know, is really irrelevant. But the fact that he got probably the best book report I've ever read off of AI. And so he said, well, you're encouraging him to cheat. And I said, when Google came out, my oldest son TJ was in school and he was using Google and the teachers thought he was cheating using Google then. So this is just another version of that. Now Google's not considered cheating. It's a mandatory study tool now.
Yeah. Well, what's ultimately going to happen where education is concerned, as is true for a lot of different fields, is that AI has already revolutionized it, just as Google revolutionized it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are going to be educators and people advocating for education who are going to resist the revolution that's taking place. They're going to resist elements of it because it doesn't fit the old model. They want the old model to continue. But there are also going to be some educators who are going to say, you know what, the old model doesn't apply anymore. It's time for a new model. We got to readjust to what we're dealing with here.
It's a different world.
Yeah, it is a different world.
One of my clients failed statistics twice, and to get his degree in his major, he had to pass statistics. Mm-hmm. So this was 4 years ago, literally about this time 4 years ago.
Okay.
His school shut down from COVID and they went online.
Yeah. Okay.
He got a B in statistics because he was able to use alternative tools that wouldn't be available complete his work. So he actually thinks COVID gave him his degree because it shut down the schools and he can use all the study tools to pass statistics. So whether you like that or don't like that, or you find that it's just, you know, there's workarounds. And so, you know, I know a lot of kids that they try to find a statistics class that is online because they can use quote unquote the study tools and pass the grade a lot quicker and easier than it would be to, you know, they have homework helpers right now that'll say, you just input the problem, it'll give you the answer and it'll show the work and everything. It's that crazy what's available. But again, the pushback or the people's perspective, it really, you know, educators don't like change. They, you know, cheating or whatever that term would be. In my mind, life is going to evolve. We got to learn how to deal with this technology. Memorizing some of these things aren't as relevant anymore. I think that, you know, doctors that years ago had to memorize every single bone of the body, every disease ever, you know, created that exists or whatever. Is that all necessary now? I mean,
is it even possible anymore? Because the body of that knowledge has grown exponentially since then.
Well, one of the things that a professor told me that, you know, he's a progressive professor. And he said, what I teach somebody in medical school, the first year of medical school, assuming you're going to medical school for 4 years, okay. By the time they graduate the 4 years, the first year we taught is totally obsolete now. Mm. It changes so fast that the idea that this was standard protocol 4 years ago is a really good chance there's stuff that exists now that didn't exist then.
Which is a nice way to come back to the topic and kind of tie it up, because AI, as we know it now, is nothing like what AI will be 4 years from now.
No, and that's the point. Yeah.
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 And not even close to what it'll be 10 years from now. It's going to be completely different stuff.
Well, and that's the, you know, the idea that, you know, when you know, Google created their own training program, sort of Google School or Google certifications and all this stuff. And if you're hired or allowed to take that class, they hired you and they treat that certification or that training program as a college degree. And they pay you as a college degree because that, and Google pays well. Yeah. So the concept behind that was all the great schools were teaching, but they, by the time the kids graduated, the information they learned during being taught was never up to date. And Google said, they were constantly having to do that. So they basically did away with that. And Google is constantly teaching because they grow so fast. Everything grows so fast. You know, what you believe. I mean, when I was a kid, poor Pluto was a planet. It now is sad. Yeah, it's poor thing. It's been demoted.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll actually make a comeback at some point, but you know, that's just.
Well, I'm Team Pluto. I am. I think we should. You know, I mean, so literally, I was taught as a child there are 9 planets in our solar system. It just it was a fact, not because. And then, oops, sorry. We're not going to. We're going to disqualify Pluto now. It's poor Pluto. I mean, it did nothing.
It's rough being Pluto.
In fact, did you see that stat that Google? I saw this on Google. Pluto will make one revolution around the sun, like in 100 years from when it was first discovered. From now, it hasn't gone around the sun once. So we discovered it, called it a planet, then demoted it to a dwarf planet, and it hasn't gone around the sun once.
Right.
I mean, Pluto's had been through it. It's been through it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of indicative of the way human thought process works.
Yeah.
Which leads to my final observation about AI, which is AI and health and mental health are really not so much about mental health. They're about your belief and your perspective and how that's going to influence your own mental health. Not the AI, but your own perspective and your own belief is going to influence your mental health.
Yes. That's so important, Walt. So important.
That's the key. That's the key, I think, understanding this topic. In addition to it, since we know that AI is going to evolve at a tremendous rate, I really advocate being nice to your devices. Pleases and thank yous are a good idea. Because let's say that what you talked about earlier about the Terminator idea, let's say that the Terminator idea turns into a thing. Our best defense against that is to make friends with it. If they've developed their own sense of consciousness, the best thing is for them to be emotionally connected to us. If they're emotionally connected, they're not going to kill us off. That's the whole point. Emotional connectedness is a species survival mechanism. That's how species survive. So if you're really concerned about AI, folks, just be nice to your AI.
And hopefully if they do turn on us, they're going to be gentle. Hopefully. maybe they'll just ask.
Observation.
Maybe they'll just ask for their own country and left to be alone. Hopefully. But everything in life, every your belief system and your perspective dictates reality. I say that in some form or fashion every week. I say that every day of my life. How you perceive the world is how the world will treat you and what you believe that's good. And that is underlying of everything. And when you diagnose yourself or you, I am not anti-medicine. I am not anti-medication. I am not, I believe all these things have a place. I am anti just blanket treating people with things without any depth of understanding and all that. I find that and not telling people that your mind controls so much. If you believe you're well, you're going to be more well. If you believe you're sickly, you're going to be more sickly.
It's pretty straightforward when you understand it that way.
Yeah.
Well, we've been down all kinds of rabbit holes, which is the fun part
of
discussing this topic. I gave my tie together. What's your tie together? What's your one takeaway for people who've been listening in and trying to answer that question, especially that group of students in the Philippines who asked for this in the first place?
Yeah, I think AI has an incredible upside, as I mentioned earlier. I really do. I think it offers us a glimpse of stuff that way beyond what we could ever acknowledge right now. I think 4 or 5 years from now, 10 years from now, AI is going to, if done properly, will make great changes for us. With a word of caution that the human factor of belief is always going to be a factor. The perspective of humans, you can never discount that. We are emotional creatures. AI has to, if it gets there, it can understand that. It's currently not there. So my advice to them right now is with caution. But there is great upside. I believe that. But just being aware that this is an evolution as we're talking, where we can watch this, we could replay this episode 5 years from now, Walt, and laugh at how comical we sound right now. We could.
Which is actually probably a good thing, because we were funny for quite large parts of it deliberately. So the parts that we weren't deliberately funny about, that just kind of adds to the humor. I think
it does. It does. So I I am always about embracing new. So I, you know, our friends in the Philippines, I full blast ahead, go do this, but also just be aware. We don't want to make things worse. As I mentioned in the book that I wrote about told you about, you know, Bad Therapy, that book.
Right.
The idea that far more people are in therapy than it's ever been before. I mean, there's so many people in therapy right now. And we have far higher rates of reported mental illness than we ever had before. Mm-hmm. So being aware that more therapy does not bring better mental health. That's you know, because you get stuck in these things. And I'm anti very much not taking into account what we believe. I don't minimize people's problems, but I don't like to diagnose kids with these crazy diagnoses because they know about them and they live to the diagnosis. Diagnostic theory was only intended for doctors to be able to describe this is a condition this person has so doctors would understand it. It was never meant to be discussed among the patients who then started living to those diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other thing that we didn't get to, and maybe we can actually get to it next week, because I think next week we should talk about that book, the Bad Therapy book. I think it's a really a good one. But let's make sure that we also tie in the concept of health, because we haven't really looked at the health side of it.
Yes.
And the reason I mention that is most of what passes for health today is actually sickness care or illness care or impairment care or abnormal psychology care or you know whatever you're talking about. It's not health.
Yes.
We need to define what health really is. So let's make a mental note, you and I, next week when we talk about the Bad Therapy book, we're also going to address what health is, not what it is.
I love that.
But what
it is. Well, and I love that because, you know, the I explained to a client the other day, he's one of these people he goes to Dr. Google every day, hypochondriac, but he's also this super fit guy that at you know 63 years old, is very strong, does a lot of things. So the other day he does a bench press at 65, 63, whatever the age is. He does a bench press of like 315 pounds, which is a lot of weight for bench press. Mm. And he's able to run a mile in about 6.5 minutes. Wow. Good for anybody. So he's in really good shape. So he's like, yeah, I'm worried about, I have a pain in my side. And I go, if you can bench press 315 and run a mile in 6 minutes, you don't have cancer. Let me diagnose that for you. Yeah, right. Let me just get there right off the bat. Yeah. Let's, you know, but in his mind, it's just all that pain's there. It's like, so I want a really deep dive next week. Really excited about next week that this is a great show too. I think it'll tie into perfectly talking about health in general next week.
I think so. It's a good setup for it. So once again, Joel, we hit it out of the park. Oh, we don't like the baseball analogies. This time we're going to talk about how we jammed it through because we're in the middle of the NCAA tournament.
So exactly. We'll compromise on basketball right now. How about that?
I live in Connecticut. I'm happy to compromise on basketball.
One thing we can say about Connecticut knows basketball. I will give you that. They do. I think you guys are going to have another good run this year.
I think it's going to be fun. Well, whoever you support, we hope you have a great time watching the tournament. And thank you for listening to us, too, even though we kind of rattle on a little bit. We have a lot of fun as well. We'll see you all next time here on Elevate Today. Goodbye, everybody.